Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And as part of a series that we're doing on electromagnetic fields and electrosensitivity, we had an excellent interview this week with Dr. Blank, Professor Blank, who is at Columbia University. Dr. Martin Blank has documented some of the cellular effects of electromagnetic fields and how they can be harmful to our health. Today, we're going to talk to another expert, this time from the standpoint of environmental engineering to reduce exposures to electromagnetic fields. He's Larry Gust. Larry is located in Southern California. He is an electrical engineer. He also, incidentally, is a certified mold remediator, so he works in many areas of environmental cleanup. He is what is termed a certified electromagnetic radiation safety advisor. We're going to find out about that. A certified building biological and ecology consultant. He's a member of the National Electromagnetic Field Testing Association. And he's on the faculty and board of something called the International Institute for Building Biology and Ecology. So welcome to the program, Larry. It's nice having you as a contributor. And this word building biology, it kind of sounds like the German term Baubiologie. Is that where this movement took its name from?
Yes, Dr. Hoffman. I'm pleased to be on your program today. We have Americanized the name. We had too many people who thought biology had something to do with bowels. And in order to get the thinking across, we changed it to building biology. And it's this is the study of the interaction between the buildings we build and human health.
And that's very, very important because design and light and ventilation and the type of materials that we use, the toxins that they release, and of course the electromagnetic fields in homes have a major influence on our health and well-being. And this is little recognized because we sort of build indiscriminately. We build aesthetically, we build for convenience, we build for economy, but often we don't build to encourage health.
And that's exactly right. It's a secondary thought. People would rather put in, wood floors downstairs where their guests can see them, but they put in carpeting in the bedrooms where they subject themselves to all the collected dusts every time they walk across them, and they have a habitat for dust mites. So that sort of thing happens when you don't understand the implications here.
And so you are a certified building biologist, and how does one get trained in that field?
Well, the Institute for Building Biology and Ecology provides a training program, a certification program for Building Biology Environmental Consultants, or BBECs, and that is one runs once per year. There are actually three classes, one on indoor air quality, water quality, one on electromagnetic radiation, and one on how you build healthy new buildings, and they take place throughout the year. I think it's February, May, and August.
And incidentally, is there a directory of these individuals? Because, when I bought, my apartment and when I bought my home, years back, I wish I'd known about guys like you because although you're on the West Coast, I'm sure that there are probably not that many, but there are a scattering of individuals across the country who can perform these functions.
That's correct. And if people would go to buildingbiology.net, and then there's a little button for experts, you will find a listing of the people who have been certified from around the country.
So how does it work? When someone buys a house, do they call you in as part of the home inspection? I mean, certainly there's going to be a home inspection, from like standpoint of termites or from the standpoint of, is the house structurally sound? I mean, that's what you want to do if you're going to put several hundred thousand dollars into a home. But are you called upon when somebody purchases a home?
I am. In fact, I was just discussing a job like that this morning. And during the due diligence period, you typically have a building and building inspection as well as building systems inspections. And although those kinds of folks do kind of have an eye out for mold, they don't really know as much about that area. I am hired to do environmental assessment, which is, you know, there's a little bit of overlap in mold, but we mold and look at chemicals and we look at water intrusion evidence and we look at electromagnetic fields, which is to say wiring errors, how to mitigate electric fields, and then what is the influence from outside the building, usually a home, from all of the communications radiations we're generating today, cell phone radiation, cordless phone radiation, Wi-Fi radiation.
So we'll talk about that in greater depth in just a moment, the EMFs, the effects on human health and, you know, how to identify them. But are you mostly called upon to do inspections just pro forma, just to make sure that everything's okay? Or are you sometimes called in on cases where people are mysteriously ill, maybe on a doctor's referral, or because someone has become aware of EMFs as a possible contributing factor to their health problems?
Yeah, there's a mix of those types of incentives for calling me. I work with half a dozen doctors. They could be MDs who are more, you know, holistically inclined, chiropractors, even massage therapists, people who get into discussions with their clients about their health, and sometimes it rolls over into, you know, what's happening with their home, and then they call me. There's also a segment of people who are just very health conscious, and they talk among themselves, and my name gets passed around, and they call, and they just want kind of like a physical for their house.
Right.
And want to know how they might, you know, improve the situation beyond what they have today, but they don't have any specific health issues.
It's kind of like Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so you have like on your truck, you have a logo of a ghost with a slash across it, you know, that you get rid of ghosts.
That's very funny. I don't, but I did do a piece for NBC where we all walked down the center of the street with all of our instrumentation and looked like Ghostbusters.
They could play the Ghostbuster theme in the background.
Exactly. It was very funny, but it's also apropos because you don't see ghosts and
right.
You don't see most of the things we're talking about today.
Interesting. So do you have any case studies of successful interventions where people's health and well-being have been improved by some intervention that you performed?
Well, there's quite a few of them. Back at the beginning of my career, probably now 20 years ago, I dealt with a woman, and this is when I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. She was a highly educated woman on the technical side and had moved from California to Atlanta, and she was so ill she could basically not leave the house. And in the process of evaluating the house, we found, you know, heavy levels of mold in the basement/crawlspace area and high levels of electromagnetic fields, and we'll talk about those, what they specifically are later, but we were able to reduce the mold, we filtered the air, reduce the level of electromagnetic field radiation, and she went on to get a job at the local university in the environmental area, and she's moved around the country now to several other jobs, and so it's very, you know, a very neat outcome to that.
That is very gratifying. What are some of the first, let's start with the definition. You know, what is an electromagnetic field, and you know, what are some of the sources?
Okay, electromagnetic field is kind of a catch-all term for the layman that doesn't really hold a lot of meaning from a technical sense. So there are fields that are generated by the power system in a building or a house. And those fields are called, there's an electric field and a magnetic field, hence perhaps the term electromagnetic field. They're separate types of energies. They're measured with different equipment, and remediating issues with them requires different techniques. Most homes today have high electric fields, and they're particularly an issue in the sleeping rooms, and they interfere with your ability to sleep well and to heal because they're a continual stressor on the body. Magnetic fields are basically, for most homes, are from wiring errors, although if your home has been built next to too near to a power line, you could have magnetic fields from outside of your home. Those are much more difficult to handle, reduce than wiring errors in your home. When you find wiring errors in a person's home, then you get bring an electrician in who is going to be looking to see where those are made and then undoing them. And usually that's a pretty doable sort of thing, although sometimes it can take quite a while, you know, with the miles of wiring we have in our homes these days.
Well, examples of external sources might be someone who lives close to power lines. There actually have been some studies of schools located close to power lines in New York State. With some people say reassuring results, other people say disturbing results, because I think in one study there was a slightly higher risk of certain types of cancer in, you know, pediatric cancer, which is an unusual type of cancer in these kids. And then also microwave radiation from like cellular towers, right? More and more people they're trying to underwrite the cost of real estate by placing microwave towers and leasing them out to some of these big companies, and these emanate pretty strong signals, don't they?
That's true. I mean, I say I'd rather step back and call this class of radiation wireless radiation.
Okay.
Because there's more than just cell phones involved here, and the radiation is of the same nature. But in order to support all the people with cell phones and with smartphones, if you will, who are downloading data and surfing the internet and looking at movies and all that, there's a tremendous build-out of cellular antennas or infrastructure all over the country. Nobody wants to lose their call. Nobody wants to have a dead spot, so they got to hang up antennas in places where there's dead spots to cover those dead spots. That might, you know, be, let's say, on the telephone pole across from your home. Not so good when you're really near the antenna.
Unbeknownst to you, because, I mean, sometimes these are pretty unobtrusive.
That's right. I mean, they put them in palm trees and pine. I saw some that looked like pine trees driving around.
Here in New York, they have phony trees. They really look super fake, but you know, they're actually towers.
No, that was their answer to the argument that these things reduce property values. So we dress them up, and that removes that as an argument for not citing the tower there. And then at this point, people who in the local municipality have no more authority over citing a cell phone towers if they can't claim something like reduction in property values, because you can't claim health issues with cell phone towers, unfortunately. Federal legislation in 1992, the Telecommunications Act of 1992, precluded local governments from making that argument to keep things from being, towers from being sited in their communities.
So it's almost kind of like a form of eminent domain. You can just push your way through.
Exactly right.
There's no way to resist. Let's take a room-by-room tour of a typical home, and we can talk about, you know, some of the potential sources of trouble. And, you know, that's what you do, because, you know, you like an alert sniffing dog. You know, you go into a home environment, and there are certain places that you focus in on. Let's start with the bedroom. You know, why is the sleeping place so important?
Well, in the building biology philosophy, you're exactly right. That is the most important, crucial room, because you're healing at night. Your body's rebuilding itself at night. It's in a kind of even a very much different state. It doesn't really tolerate stress very well at night. You know how a ticking clock can sometimes bother you. It's sleep in the bed at night, but doesn't bother you during the day. So that's the reason that environment is so important. We want it to be a low stress environment, and have your body busy battling other issues while it's trying to heal itself. And I'm sure Dr. Blank covered a lot of detail about, you know, what goes on in bodies when mm-hmm. they're assaulted by these radiations, which you want to, you know, we take a tour of the bedroom. Let's just do that. I'll go through a typical bedroom. So I look behind the bed. Oh, I see a little black box plugged into the outlet. And that little black box is, you know, running the radio or the charger for the cell phone or the iPod or something like that. And it's right at the head of the bed, and it's generating elevated magnetic fields.
And that's a DC converter, right?
Yes, a DC converter. Is another way of talking about that. So people plug those things in, never thinking about the implications of what they emit.
Well, maybe that's where they charge their cell phone, right by the bed, because that's the last thing they do at night is they check their iPad, they check their cell phone, and then they put it into a dock. And some of these new docks, they're not even plug-in docks. They're actually, you just lay the cell phone on top, and it charges, you know, as if by magic through the air.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the next stop. You look next to the bed and you see the phone sitting there, and the phone is not turned off at night, and it's transmitting a signal every 3 minutes or so, a burst of information out to the local tower saying, hey, I'm here, I'm ready to get a call if you want to send it to me. And so all night long, your body is being assaulted by these, hammer blows, if you will, of the signal going out from the cell phone. Emails are downloading if they're coming in the middle of the night. All this data being transferred back and forth right next to where you're sleeping. Not a good idea. The other thing that we'll see in bedroom areas are table lamps on either side of the bed. And, everybody has those, and they're strong emitters, not of radio frequency, energy. They're emitters of electric fields that we talked about earlier in our discussion.
It seems the ones that use dimmers are particularly strong. I mean, I know sometimes if I keep a radio too close to one lamp that I have, it's a beautiful lamp aesthetically, but it's on a dimmer. And I have to position the radio in some distant location at a specific angle so as not to get a lot of static.
You know, that is one way. You can use the radio tuned off the station, usually at the lower levels, you know, at the lower end of the AM band, to search your house for noise-generating sources, and dimmers creating radio frequency fields. They're lower in frequency. They're in the, you know, a couple hundred thousand cycle per second or hertz range, but their radio waves nevertheless. They're called dirty energy, I guess, or dirty electricity in the vernacular. And that's something, you know, that is to be avoided at sleeping time too, having a bunch of lights on dim around the house and not turning them out, and having that energy transmitted on the wires in the house and ending up in your bedroom, exposing your body to that type of a electric field frequency.
What else might be a concern in a bedroom?
Well, going on, we sometimes find water beds with water bed heaters, and those have produced high magnetic fields when they're running. I mean, when I mean high, I'm talking about a goal of being less than 1 milligauss, preferably 0.2 of a milligauss, and you're going to be on top of a water bed heater, and that could be 10 milligauss. So that's 10 to 20 times higher than you'd like to see it. There's electric blankets that you find, and they produce high electric fields and high magnetic fields, and you sleep under that all night. It's not a great idea, given, you know, what Martin Blanket has been telling you about these sort of radiations. So those are things we notice that people have. People like to have entertainment centers in their bedrooms, and big screen TVs, and the static charges on these TVs, on the screens, you know, if you rub your hand over a screen, it kind of crackles. They change the air ionization in your bedroom, and all natural air has a mix of positively charged ions and negatively charged ions. Those are like gas particles that have a charge on them, and your body's used to having, you know, a ratio of more negative to positive, and it affects how you sleep, how restful it is, what's happening with your sinuses. And if you discharge all of those things on a TV screen and lower them, then you can have sinus problems, you can have sleep disturbances, and so forth. So, you know, I tell people it's hard for people to do this, but, you know, your bedroom is really the place you are going to be. It's not an entertainment place. It's a place to sleep and heal. It should be more like a monk's room. And it should be like an entertainment center or an office.
Right. Well, that's a good sleep hygiene principle anyway, because, you know, just the stress of having all that stimulus in the room creates distraction. And, you know, it's one of the principles of sleep psychology, that you want to, you know, the bed is where you sleep or make love.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point. I was just reading an article about the blue light from televisions, which stimulates your pineal gland and makes it difficult for you to sleep, because instead of getting the melatonin going up, it reverses that and pushes it down. So watching TV at night in bed is not a good introduction to getting to sleep.
Okay, so let's say you're a little more sophisticated than that. You know, put the TV away, but you're an inveterate reader like I am, And I used to, you know, get myself a nice print book and, you know, read a few pages, and pretty soon I'd feel drowsy, put the book away, and drift off to sleep. Nowadays, all my books come to me via e-books. I use the iPad. I lie in bed, I perch the iPad on my stomach, and I read for 15 or 20 minutes. And, you know, hopefully don't fall asleep clutching the iPad. You know, I'll at least put it aside.
Right.
But what,
right.
What about that?
Well, the iPad is a computer, you know, and it has its own emissions, even though it's not plugged in. It's being operated by battery, and there's all kinds of electrical operations going on it. I'm not so sure I'd be concerned about 20 minutes on my stomach or on my lap, but I certainly wouldn't make a long-term practice of that. There are trays that you can get to block the radiation. I've had customers with those, and they work quite well. Practically nothing coming through the bottom of the tray compared to from the bottom of the computer. So if you have you like to sit around and work on a chair with a thing on your lap, then you can get one of these trays from off the internet and use it to block the radiation. One thing, Doctor, I wanted to mention
sure.
is the everybody is going to changing out their light bulbs to energy efficient light bulbs.
Oh yeah,
you're liable to find that nice lamp you have next to the bed that you're going to read, well, maybe more than 20 minutes, is a compact fluorescent light bulb,
mm-hmm.
and that has a power supply in it, and it's emitting high frequency radio waves from it.
More so than an old-fashioned Edison-style incandescent light bulb.
Correct. There isn't any emissions of that nature from an incandescent bulb.
Well, there you go. That's progress, right? You know, we're outlawing the old-fashioned bulbs.
I mean, there is something to be said for the wanting to
energy efficiency.
Energy, but I'm suggesting that for the amount of time you use the light in your bedroom to read a book, you can probably go back to an incandescent light bulb without a great economic impact
mm-hmm.
from doing that. Also, LED bulbs are a better bet because they don't have mercury in them.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, I know Dr. Klinghart up in Seattle was talking about the toxic effect of the mercury signature that's in the light coming from these compact fluorescent light bulbs, and it's, you know, getting into the body, and bodies don't like mercury, and he's found that to be another a bad exposure that people can have.
And not so much based on the physical presence of the mercury, because unless you break it, you know, the mercury's
correct.
Not getting
correct.
Out, but that it's transmitting some of the signature or the configuration of mercury via,
that's right.
you know, electronically or, you know, almost
that's
homeopathically.
Right. Yes, exactly. That's exactly the way to think about it. So that's another thing I think you need to get rid of those bulbs in your bedroom and put back incandescent bulbs, or if you want to go for the LEDs, that would be another choice.
Okay.
So that's kind of gotten us through. Then we want to look under the bed, and we typically say, look, there's about 3 extension cords and a power strip.
Hmm.
All of those are irradiating the bed with the electric fields we talked about earlier. They put a voltage on your body. I find people who are sleeping in their beds where they have 3, 4, 5 volts AC on their body. Never been there before in the history of mankind.
And
this can cause heart palpitations, muscle cramping, poor sleep, getting up frequently, night sweating, muscle cramps. The list sort of goes on. And not everybody has all those things, but some people, you know, are displaying that kind of symptomology. I mean, there's people who don't have any symptomology.
Well, let's address that, because there is this concept of what's called electrosensitivity,
yes.
Which Dr. Blank introduced us to in a previous podcast, that certain people, you know, just like with people who have multiple chemical sensitivity, I mean, some people are almost oblivious to the presence of industrial
yes.
chemicals. They seem to be, the tough rats, like the rats who survive, multiple efforts to exterminate them in the New York City subway tunnels. You know, the tough
right.
rats, the survivor rats. And then they're the people who we might term are canaries in the coal mine. They're ultra sensitive. They're like the canaries that coal miners used to take down so that when they were methane fumes that were released into the environment, they would keel over and warn the miners that it was time to get out.
Right.
So are there individuals like that when it comes to electrosensitivity?
Well, I do think that they are the canary in the coal mine. I think if we harken back to Dr. Klinghart, who I just recently heard talk, he's telling us that everybody is affected by electromagnetic radiation. It's not you know, so they're doing things at the cellular level, which is going to result in malfunction of the body organs. Some people have much more upfront reaction to these fields, and they get headaches and they get other effects that seem to be not consistent among all individuals. But he's convinced that everybody is being harmed by these things. So that's why these people who are sensitive are our equivalent of the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that the canary in the coal mine, doesn't mean that the miners aren't being harmed. It just means it's a warning that the toxins are reaching a level that might be life-threatening.
That's correct.
So, okay, so let's talk about, another feature of bedrooms or the sleeping situation in general. We tend to, use our computers, then we just go to bed. And we leave on our Wi-Fis. And our Wi-Fis, I walk into a room in a new house or a new environment, and I see, 8, 10, 20 different Wi-Fi connections that I can choose from, of different strengths, and then I have to plug in my, find out what's the password, and then I get in on a Wi-Fi. But that means that those things are actually projecting through the environment like little invisible rays.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, you probably these are all the neighbors. It could be on either side of the house. It could be behind you, across the street.
Or in an apartment building like I live in New York. It's a beehive.
Absolutely. They're just all over the place. And these are, obviously the ones that you are with in your own space are the strongest. These are designed to be put into a single room in somebody's apartment or house and to project themselves throughout the entire dwelling so you can have reception everywhere. They naturally have to be stronger at the source in order to project themselves as far out as they need to go. These are called Wi-Fi routers. They're becoming stronger and stronger. So there's a demand to have greater coverage,
right,
not lose the signal.
Faster downloads and so on and so on.
And so the amount of radiation, what we call the power density of the radiation is climbing. And there's certainly, from a medical standpoint, you've heard that this is not, good for people. Skin conditions, digestive upsets, headaches are the result of this. And those are just the visible things, the iceberg that's above the level of the ocean, not what you're happening below, which are other things that are probably more detrimental to us in the long run.
Mm-hmm. So is it
so,
a good...
Pardon me for interrupting.
Sure.
I do not recommend anybody use Wi-Fi in their house. Most certainly, they need it to turn it off. And in most cases, that means unplug the power supply from the router at night when they go to bed.
Right. That's precisely what I was going to ask you. At the very least, if you're going to use Wi-Fi, does it make sense to turn it off? After all, you're not going to use it. It's no big deal. You can just, flip it, pull out the power cord on your Wi-Fi, turn it off.
And beyond that, there are also routers that you can get that have have physical buttons on them where you can turn it off and on. I have a Netgear one that I just bought about 2 months ago, which has that feature. So when I want to download an e-book to my Kindle, I turn both those things on. I download the e-book, and then I turn them both off. And my computer is hardwired into back of that same router, but that doesn't interfere with the router. I mean, it's a hardwired connection, and you don't have to unplug it. So that's a really neat compromise to reducing the radiation when you absolutely don't have to have it, and only using it when you do.
Wow. Yeah, I got to say that this really poses a dilemma because we're just making headlong progress towards a wireless world. where we have multiple devices, our computers, our tablets, our cell phones, our e-books, and right. yet, you know, it seems that we're just doing this oblivious of the potential health harms.
Well, it certainly appears that way because there's very little in the American press about this at all. And people, you know, we're also dealing with addiction issues now with the use of these devices, so that even if you were to hear us talking about this, you might not take any action because you just have to, you know, have to use the device.
And mm-hmm.
People. We're entering uncharted territory in what we call fraught waters, I think.
Right. I mean, in so many ways, we've altered our biology, you know, with the foods we eat, with the air we breathe, with our style of exercising or not exercising, and now we're electronically altering our environment in a way that's never been seen in the 6 million years of human evolution.
That's right. Somebody once termed this as one of the largest experiments that's ever been done, being done on the entire population to see what we're seeing what the effects are. Are we going to spend any time talking about smart meters, which is another...
Well, yeah, let's do that. Okay.
Yeah, the smart meter rollout, which has been funded by your tax dollars with the Recovery Act back a couple of years ago, $3.4 billion to be distributed out to buy these meters and get them mounted on your home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, great concept, because, I mean, you know, who can't argue with the concept that, you know, people waste energy and that they're peak times and that they're, you know, so maybe you should do your, you know, use your washing machine at night during heat. I mean, all this, you know, it sounds great in theory, but there's one immutable law, which is the law of unforeseen consequences, right?
Exactly right. Yes, I mean, this is a very involved discussion, but I would refer your listeners to Take Back Your Power, which is a movie on DVD that it was released just the middle of this month. It has a complete rundown on what smart meters are, how they work, what they mean to us, and what you might want to do about them. There's a lot of well-known expert...
Is there a real website for Take Back Your Power?
Takebackyourpower.com.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so...
That's important.
So but the subject of smart meters, I mean, what you can do about them varies around the country. Here in California, we have had groups that formed up and pressured the Public Utility Commission to force utilities to allow people to opt out.
Well, do they radiate harmful fields?
Yeah, and the reason for wanting to do this is they're like having a cell phone antenna on the side of your house. They use a cell phone system. They communicate what you're doing in your house back to the power company on a periodic basis that's chosen by your utility. Mm-hmm. There are collector meters in neighborhoods which collect the signals from everybody else in the neighborhood, and then they transmit them on to a cell phone tower. Those types of meters are transmitting like all the time because of the number of incoming signals and outgoing signals. And this is like having a cell phone antenna mounted on the side of your house, and it's a non-directional antenna, so it basically goes in all directions. And it's pulsed, so it's very, very sharp, strong, short-duration energy signals that are coming out into the environment. And I'll tell you, Doctor, the number of people who have suddenly become electrosensitive has just skyrocketed here in California. The meter went in, and within a day or a month, depending on the individual sensitivity, they're not sleeping. They've got headaches, and all kinds of problems. And some of the doctors I have been dealing with are, you know, they can just see that in the huge increase in the number of patients finding their way to their door, trying to handle these things, do something about it.
What about, let's take a brief detour through the kitchen. The kitchen is also a high-energy environment, right?
It is. It has a lot of appliances that throw off large fields. Because the use of the kitchen is short duration, I've never felt that the kitchen presented really any problem in terms of magnetic field radiation. The only caution would be person who liked to cook a lot who was pregnant and was using an electric stove with the irradiations that come from the burners, but for all other people, I don't think that that's an issue. The microwave oven is probably the most dangerous appliance in the kitchen because it leaks radiation. The design standard is 1,000 microwatts per square meter. It can leak out of that unit, and it comes mostly from the front through the little window. You can watch the food.
Right into your face when you press your nose right up to the glass and just wait for that frozen pizza to be ready.
And as you probably already know, the microwave itself kind of ruins the food in terms of the value for the human being. So it's got two marks against it. So my advice is throw it out like I did because it's the siren song of convenience. If you've got it there, it's too convenient to use when you're in a rush.
Challenging because a lot of people don't want to let go of some of the things that they're so dependent on. But one of the things that people can do is they can hire an environmental consultant like you. For some of our listeners who are in the Southern California region, Larry Gust is part of Gust Environmental. And you want to give out information about that?
Yes, the website is gustenviro.com. And by the way, you can go to my website and pick up something you can download called the 14 ways that you can improve your environment on your own.
Oh, that's great. I'll also post that on my website, the 14 ways you can improve your environment on your own.
Yeah, there's sort of 7 things for indoor air quality and 7 things in the electromagnetic area.
I will post that on Facebook for our listeners and then put it on our website. And then there are other professionals and they can be accessed through what organization?
Through the website buildingbiology.net and click on the expert button and you can see them listed by state.
Okay. And why don't you introduce us to, maybe not go through the entire list of the 14 ways, but what are some of the simple things that you can do to reduce your exposure to EMFs? First things first for, basic protection.
Well, first thing you want to do is we're going to look at the sleeping place now, looking at that as being essential to anybody. You want to basically clean all the extension cords off underneath your beds. You want to get rid of electric blankets and waterbed heaters, or you at least want to heat the bed up and then unplug them when you go to bed. You want to unplug the lamps on either side of your bed because they provide large electric fields and they induce a huge voltage on your body. If you can, you should turn the circuit breaker off for all the outlets around the bed in your bedroom, both in the bedroom and any wall that happens to adjoin the wall that the bed is on in your bedroom.
That's interesting because, I guess there's a way to isolate those without making your frozen foods defrost.
But if they do these things on their own, they could have somebody with a meter come in and set up and do this testing, but the things I'm recommending are going to reduce these things 20-30%, or if you do the circuit turn off, it's probably going to be 80%. So that's always to be recommended. You want to be sleeping in a room that in a bed that has natural fibers, cotton sheets, wool blankets, that sort of thing, so that we don't have the air ionization we talked about earlier get fouled up. We want to have the TV in a cabinet where you can close the cabinet doors on top of the screen when you're done with it at night. So those are some.
Because it would literally change the properties of the air by removing the ionized particles that are so essential for health.
Right, exactly right. Get rid of all of your wireless devices. They don't belong in the bedroom at night. Turn off the Wi-Fi at night. We didn't talk about cordless telephones. Those are even worse than Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
These things run all the time, whether you're using them or not.
Yeah.
And they emit a signal that's not going to be good for you. So go back to regular corded telephones if you have hardwired phone lines.
And the compact fluorescents, especially in your bedroom.
Compact fluorescents, that's right. Especially if you're going to be next to your favorite chair, next to your bed, for sure. So what else can we say? you know, if you do see cell phone towers that are near you, you might be wanting to get yourself an evaluation for RF radiation, because there are things that can be done to block these radiations.
To shield your home, or to shield a specific room like the bedroom.
Yes, I've had to do that here. I've had to paint my house on the outside with a carbon-based paint that's made in Germany that's meant to reflect or absorb RF radiation, because the hospital three blocks away has got antennas on top of it.
Wow, now. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's many things to do. You know, the list of the 14 ways or things you can do yourself. If you get into this, you can find somebody perhaps on the building biology website that can come in and help you to do more things that require instrumentation.
I'll also mention that for those of our listeners who are in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, coming up in November at the Open Center, Larry will be part of a very exciting seminar, How to Protect Ourselves and Growing Children from Electromagnetic Fields. So there'll be all kinds of outstanding speakers, including my aforementioned guest on a previous podcast, Dr. Martin Blank, and a variety of experts from the field. So it should be quite interesting, November 15th, 2013, in the evening. And you can call.
The nice thing about that, Doctor, is we've got 3 hours, so there's plenty of time to delve into these things in much more detail than you normally get the opportunity to do.
I think that'll be a real eye opener for a lot of people. You know, many topics, why exposures matter to you, your children, and even to pets. You know, that the pets are low down on the ground, and you know, they may be more exposed to some of these hazards.
I mention one other thing?
Sure.
The buildingbiology.net website has a non-profit public outreach corporation, and the goal is to educate the public. So there's much information on that website, and a great deal of it is free. There's videotapes, and there's written materials and so forth. People can go and use that.
I'll give it out again. It's Building Biology.
Buildingbiology.net. Also, my own website, earlier, has a great deal of information on it as well for people's benefit.
And that is, once again?
That is Gust. Enviro, ENVIRO.com.
All right, I'm certainly going to check it out and download those 14 ways you can improve your environmental exposure.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. This is a most thought-provoking subject and a disconcerting subject, because the vast majority of us are unaware of it and are not taking proper precautions. And this may just be the tip of the iceberg of a phenomenon that could really overtake us in the 21st century and cause a lot of problems. So I'm glad you're focusing on it, and congratulations on the important work you're doing, and keep it up, and keep us informed.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman. It's been a joy talking with you today.
My pleasure. Larry Gust of Gust Environmental. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.